everybody. Welcome to Tadaima, Terrace House Podcast, your weekly companion to your favorite show on Netflix. I'm Robert Scarpinito, and I'm joined here by Daily Wilhelm.
Konbanwa.
Jack Cepeda.
Irishimase.
And Colin Sparling.
Hello, everybody. Don't mind our DJ neighbors upstairs.
Yeah, you can probably hear it on my track, and it's great. It's just, you know, we've got dinner and a show. That's what we're doing right now.
We've got a background track here as Robert's talking. Yeah, they're just dropping the bass up there, and they don't give a shit.
Such as apartment living. It's just how it goes, man.
Yeah, and we've knocked on their door many times. So this is what we're living with. So if you want to, actually, I was about to dox them, but then I realized we were doxing ourselves. So never mind.
Don't do any of those things.
Robert, the doxing incident. You know what else did a bunch of docking kind of things? Ryo and Vivi in this episode of Terrace House.
True facts.
Smooth. Yeah.
Thank you.
I really hope the direct translation of what they said really was docking, because I didn't catch what the Japanese was, but I really hope that's what it was.
They just said docking.
I hate it.
In my head.
This week, we're talking about Tokyo 2019 2020, episode 28, Starving for Affection. Such a sad title now, in retrospect.
Man, it really is. It's really sad.
I did not think the person who was starving would be the person who was starving.
Yeah, there's basically two plot points really focused on in this episode. That's Ryo and Vivi, and then Tupas basically is taking over the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of focus on very few scenes, I feel like. I feel like it was very few scenes in this episode in total.
Yeah. I honestly am surprised with how much Tupas stole the spotlight in this, considering everything we've seen of him last week. He seemed very, you know, tightly wound, very, like, a little boring, right? You know, very strict schedule kind of guy. But he kind of goes a little crazy here, and it's exciting. So let's dive into the episode. We open up with the panel where Yama jokes about how Russians are no joke. They are very serious, very proud people, and their leader rides a bear or tiger.
Yeah.
Shirtless.
or tiger.
Why not both?
Shirtless.
Yeah, they're hardy people. I think they were saying some point in this episode or another episode that international relations between Japan and Russia have never been stronger.
Yes.
As proved by this season of Terrace House.
Yes, this will smooth over the great Russo-Japan War of, I think, 1900s, early 1900s. I know there was a war. I forget when.
Seems legit.
Weird. Yep.
That checks out.
Yeah. They fought over some islands north of Japan, just like the islands to the west of Japan and Korea. So we're in the first floor. It's Hana and Kai, and this is directly picking up from the end of last episode, where, as you might remember, Hana was in tears as Vivi and Ryo, got it on.
No, they weren't. They were not.
They were just talking, right?
Let's be specific. They're just talking, but they are heavily flirting. Like, let's not put the image in people's head that they're just fucking over there on the couch and Hana's crying in the kitchen.
Yikes. Yeah, that's pretty dark.
But the panel does say she is fucking that rice later on. It's very erotic.
Whoa.
Okay, hold on.
What is that happening?
Milky rice. We need to put the milky rice on this episode.
See, the more you talk about it, it just sounds worse and worse.
Then we had to have Yama in his, by the way, like, what is he wearing? Like a purple like cardigan or some sweater? Man, it drives me crazy, though. I don't comment too much on what the panelists are wearing, but when any guy has his shirt buttoned all the way to the top of his Adam's apple, I just like kind of gag. It makes me like, whoa, that's too tight. As one of these thick neck dudes out here in the world, it just gives me stress to see the button all the way at the top.
Yeah, for me, I just think it's more stylish to not have the top one buttoned.
It's just bad. Yeah, V-necks, man. That's how I live my life. Or tank top, actually.
He needs to button that top button to hold back the Yama insults. Though I don't think it does a very good job.
It didn't work. Yeah, he's talking about the milky rice.
Control himself.
He had to apologize to Torii-chan and the rice makers of Japan who nourish him. He had to do the deep bow. The deep bow.
Oh, that was wonderful.
Moshiwaki gozaimasen.
Kai asks, or Hana asks Kai, hey, can we talk in the playroom? And as they walk over there, like, Hana can't even look at Ryo and Vivi. She wears the hood like full Yikes. On, like over
yeah,
her
eyes. Covers her eyes.
Yeah, her face and everything. She just rushes to
and
the playroom.
She's like sniffling, you know, audibly. And I think it's later.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, there's no subtlety happening here whatsoever. Because later, mm-hmm. Vivi's like, I thought you were laughing, but there were tears and sniffles. And-
yeah. I think Vivi probably knew she was crying at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And this was definitely Hana trying to be like, look at me, I'm crying. Look at me, I'm distressed and distraught. I want you to notice that I'm leaving because of you.
Sulking, head yes. tucked in the hood, in the panda hood. By the way, that robe, I was a fan. I liked the little tail. I thought it was a cute little robe.
It's cute. Tail.
Yeah, she's been rocking this for a couple episodes now, and I'm here for it. This panda onesie.
It just looks
and
comfy.
It looks very fuzzy. It also looks very hard to clean.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with all those tear soaked.
Oh, you just beat me to it. Over. I was going to say, yeah, she'll wipe it off with her tears.
Yeah, there you go.
But I think that's the big one of the big takeaways from this episode. I do this relationship that Hana and Vivi have not very healthy. It's not any healthier after this.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. So Kai and Hana go to the playroom, and I'm just saying, like, Kai, like this whole episode and last episode, like he's looking good. Like I was saying, he looks Zach De La Rocha esque of Rage Against the Machine a little bit, but like. I was getting maybe because he's helping her, he's listening intently, he's trying to give some advice and listening to her problems. I was getting some Hansan vibes here in the playroom. He reminds me of him a little bit, and I think he reminds the panelists of Hansan a little bit too, with his deep voice, with his Adam Apple, with his kind of just muted demeanor, you know. So I was just kind of like, Kai's kind of coming up in the world here a little bit for me.
Yeah. I can see that. I will say at first I thought Kai was a little quiet, like he was just sitting there and listening, which is fine, you know, right? Like sometimes people just need a shoulder to lean on, right? Mm-hmm. Hana even described Ryo as, and this made me sick to my stomach, she described Ryo as the person I have special feelings for. Special feelings. You guys ever have special feelings?
Special feelings.
Special feelings.
Special feelings.
It's like, why can't she say, like, I have a crush on him, or I like him, I'm interested in him.
Yeah,
it's so she obvious. Has to be so talk roundabout.
She has to talk about it like she's a freshman in high school.
Mm-hmm. The thing about this conversation too was that I guess her takeaway was like, I know he doesn't like me, or I strongly suspect he doesn't feel the same way, but I have to confess even further than I already have to him, or else I'll feel like unfulfilled somehow. And I don't know if that's really like great advice to like actively pursue somebody when you don't feel like they like you anymore. I don't know. That's if I would give that same advice.
Yeah. There's one thing that Kai said that I kind of want to key in on here. It's where he says something to the effect of, it's not the other person's responsibility, or it's not your responsibility to worry about how the other person reacts. And so how do you guys feel about that? So like if you tell, you know, you're worried about confessing your feelings to someone, is it right or wrong to be worried about how they react?
In that case, it's like, I definitely see in this very specific situation that I feel like Hana is coming from the place that she's like, if I don't like fully fess up, I'm gonna forever regret that, like personally that's gonna be a problem for me. And that's fine to feel the need to address that, but I think there is like some responsibility to like know whether or not you're making someone else uncomfortable or burdening them with like an expectation that they're not necessarily going to fulfill and they don't like need to. Like I guess what I feel is that like she shouldn't put a lot of expectation on Ryo to like hear her out. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, because I think there's a little bit of selfishness, right, in Kai's in Kai's advice, but at the same time I think everyone has the right to be at least a little bit selfish about their feelings, right? Like if you feel this way, you should, like, whether it's, oh, I'm annoyed with you, or I like you, or I think you should do this, like, you should tell them that, right? I think there's, you owe yourself a little bit of that if it's bothering you that much. But at the same time, on the flip side, you need to be aware that what you say to them has repercussions. You know, what you say will change the way they look at you or change the way they feel about you. And that's something you need to be prepared for as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. Reading the room is such a huge aspect of Japanese culture. Like, we learn that, we see that play out in Terrace House all the time until it isn't. Where it's like in love, everyone, okay, well, now I can't read the room anymore. Now you have to expressly state this to me in no uncertain terms. Line this up for me. Okay, I like you. You like me or not? Da 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 da. So it's like, okay, they're like reading the room, but then where was reading the room when she was talking in 101 at the table? It was untimely. He was injured and he was, right. You know, but like, of course he understands what she's trying to say. And of course she already senses what the answer is going to be. So, like, where's reading the room here anywhere? It just kind of gets all thrown out when it comes to romance or love. It's like, okay, she knows already. That's why she's in this room right now with Kai speaking about this, because she knows the answer is not going to be good. She knows he has way better chemistry with Vivi, and there's nothing that can be helped about that. And she knows what the answer is. So I guess I'm just like, okay, you have your answer now. It's just kind of, you're going down an unhealthy, dark path by pursuing it until he says to you, like, grabs you by the shoulders and shakes you, like, no, I don't like you. It's like,
I don't like you.
Yeah, why go through that? Like, just move on, you know? So, I don't know. Also, it's not great news for Kai, too, as another aspect, right? Because he took Vivi out on that date, which we find out wasn't necessarily a date, you know, to her.
Oh, and she makes that clear.
Yeah, that was rough too. I was like, dude, like, just be nice about it. Like, obviously it was a date because you guys talked about the day before and then went out, but now because Rio's asking about it, oh, that wasn't a date at all. Like, what?
It wasn't a date.
That's kind of shitty. I thought of her.
Yeah. No, I think my favorite thing here is that there's an example, right, of Hana being really bad at reading the room. But then in this episode, there's a really steamy example of two people really knowing how to read the room. I think let's dive into the softcore porn of Rio and Vivi.
Woo!
Flirting. Flirting back and forth like professionals.
This is what we call, like, softcore porn. Like, we're so starved for affection in, like, this season of Terrace House that we're like, oh wow, they had a really great back and forth. Ooh, it's getting steamy in here.
Are you saying that the title of this episode is pointed back at us?
We're starved for affection. We're the ones.
It's us.
I mean, definitely. I kind of see that, yeah, as the producers or the editors, you know, looking at us based on what we've seen from Terrace House so far. But I love this scene, and I love their interaction when she hip checked him last week too, because it just reminds me of what it's like to, like, kind of have those first moments when you're falling in like with somebody or becoming maybe infatuated with somebody. It was heavy, heavy flirting, the heaviest we've seen so far in the season, and they're both very good at it. And this is what it looks like when you put these two types of people together. And I was getting butterfly feelings. It just reminded me of moments in my life where I've experienced similar things. Is nostalgic, I guess, in a sad way.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that throughout this whole scene, Vivi's still doing that that sexy shoulder thing, as Rio described it last week.
The shoulder is out. The bra strap is loose. I'm sorry. I'm just saying, that's like a hot thing. And she knows she's doing it. She knows she wore that light blue, sky blue bra, you know, because she's gonna show that strap. I mean, I don't know how premeditated that was, to be honest with you, but she knows she's flirting by throwing her shoulder out there, which didn't need to be out there. It's a total move.
Yeah, and wearing that R for Rio necklace too. How could she?
R for Rio, okay. and then R for her last name, right?
Razdumina. Yeah.
And then R for her ex.
Whoa, pump the brakes. Hold on. who would still wear that?
That's a weird one.
I can't believe that was said. I was kind of taken aback by that. I was like, oh, a little too far. Stop.
Yeah,
stop.
It's a little.
To me, though, the bigger, the more scandalous thing is what when you guys brought up. I'm sorry, I forgot who said it just a minute ago, but R for Rio. Like, Rio brought that up, and I'm telling you guys, I do not think he was necessarily playing when he said that. He's like, you ever hear that song, like, you're so vain, you probably think this song is about you, don't you? You're so vain. Anyways, Sorry. But that's what was happening there. I think he was dead serious. Not, maybe not dead serious, but more serious than I want, than he's trying to let on. Like, was that R for me? I thought it was for me.
Yeah, like, I think that was him dipping his toe in the water and she reciprocated back. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
See him being a little guilty of like being genuinely kind of like vain in this conversation though, because of all the, oh wow, me too. Oh wow, me too. And it's almost like he's like, did you study me before this? Like, did you look into my likes?
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, wow, me too.
Plus, we know he's a pirate. Pirates are, well, he moonlights as a pirate and generally they're pretty vain and full of themselves. So I can kind of see that.
And are they? And okay. And
I mean, they want that booty.
I mean, it's hard not to be vain when you're like the captain. Your face is everywhere. Girls in the house are already fangirling over you, wearing your shirt. You know, but he's always asking like, hey, where's the love? Where's the love? He's always trying to like seek that affection. And Rio is guilty, I think, very much of just wanting to know that he can if he wants to, which is kind of shitty in a lot of ways. And the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, how it's playing out with Emika, how it's playing out with Hana here. But it's hard to deny that there are some serious fireworks. There's some serious chemistry going on in this scene. They are getting along on a whole nother level than he ever did with Emika, even with that scandalous knee touch.
I was about to ask, so we're being kind of like pessimistic about like Rio and Vivi's vanity here and like during all the flirty conversation. But do we feel like there is a genuine connection here? Because I felt like there was, like, I feel like he's like being very surprised, like, wow, you really seem like you're older than me, but you're not. We have a lot of similar experiences and that connection is happening.
Yeah, I am calling out Rio's like vanity here with him saying that. Like, I think it's a joke, but I also think he's kind of serious about that. But it's hard. I mean, at the end of this, when she is stirring up that milky rice and she's like smiling and I can tell like in her head, she's replaying the events that just happened in the last 15 minutes, her head smiling about it. I'm like, oh, they're definitely banging. They're definitely dating. They're going to go date. They're like,
yeah,
how could they not? This is crazy. Actually, it puzzled me, Robert, like when you said last week, like, you don't think he likes her. Do you still feel that way? Because like, yeah, it's pretty clear to me that this is going down.
So I think you were really onto something when you said the thing about Ryo's vanity, where he likes to know he can.
He does, I think.
I think this is another one of those. I think he wants to know he can. And my guess is maybe I'm psychoanalyzing, armchair therapisting this too much. But remember, he went to an all-boys school. He didn't really get to like be like around women a lot, and he wasn't that smooth with women until recently. So now that's years of built up, like, you know, I didn't get laid a lot when I was younger, but now I can totally do whatever I want and I can prove it.
Didn't they say they're going to go on a museum date or something? I don't know, man. They were just hitting it off so hard. She took the video of him doing his hair, just saying, oh, yeah, I knew the Ponzu. I knew the Ponzu. Oh, yeah. Ponzu. I love Ponzu. That's so funny.
Oh, yeah. That's why she broke out English.
Ponzu. Yeah, her Russian accent. Going, I love Ponzu. Threw her head up.
Ponzu.
Oh, it was porny.
When they were talking about Ponzi, was really telling the moment with the museum, because it was like, she's like, I just like to go alone because, you know, then you can go at your own pace. And he was kind of like taken aback, like, oh, like you, like this was the moment for him where it was like, okay, she might be younger than me, but she's really mature and like, kind of mysterious.
Yeah. He said that, right? He said, wow, you're so, I can't remember. Like so
advanced for your age.
Advanced for your age.
That.
Yeah. But she's 24. And she is filling in all the gaps that he was seeing with the other girls, supposedly in this scene here. You know, she's giving him a lot of what he needs, and he's reciprocating. I mean, they're flirting very heavily back and forth. She made him do the head thing, the hair thing, like three times or something like that, like three times total. He's like, no, I don't want to, but he did it for her. And I don't know. It was tense, man. It was sexually tense. The entire time.
It was hot. It was hot as shit. No, I think here, I think we see examples of Ryo doing something that he wouldn't do for any of the other girls. Like if Emika asked him to do the video three times, or if Hana did, he'd be like, no, I'm good, right?
No, but here, it's okay.
His defenses are down, and Vivi knows how to hit them, right? Like when with the museum thing, She said, I'd like to go alone, but I might make an exception for you. Bam. Makes him feel special, right? And then two, when Ryo thought, oh, is the R maybe for Russia, right? And they joked about that for a little bit. Then he was like, oh, I should get a necklace that says J for Japan. And Vivi's like, it should be a V.
You know why, dude. Oh, yeah, they're 100% gonna date, and
that's where they docked right
docked.
There.
Yes. They practically docked.
So I'm gonna throw this out there, and I'm gonna be honest with you guys. I don't know what ponzu is. Can someone explain it to me?
Yeah,
it's
you
just
do.
A condiment.
Yeah, you do.
I've had it a bunch of times.
Like you,
what is it?
You eat poke quite a bit, right? It's citrusy, kind of soy saucy.
Yeah.
That's usually put on poke. Hawaiian-style poke.
You love panzo.
I'm sure I do. I've had poke several times. I don't think I've ever seen a bottle of panzu.
I guess the best way, just think of lime-flavored soy sauce. And Daily has now left the studio. She's going to a refrigerator.
Oh, did you have panzu?
To get some panzu because she loves panzu.
She's incredibly close to her fridge, folks.
After this episode, there's panzu.
Oh, so, ponzu.
Is that Ajipon?
Wait, is it the right brand? No, it's not Ajipon. It's not. It's not. It's Shirakiku.
So, guys, after this episode, I totally Amazon Prime for me some ponzu, and it's in a box waiting to be opened downstairs right now. Pretty excited about it. Okay, are you guys ready for my controversial Terrace House take of the week? Official. I need my own theme music.
Do you hate ponzu? Is that your hot take?
Are you guys ready for this? No, it's way more controversial. Are you ready?
Hit me.
Okay. Would this conversation be taking place now if Ryo worked at a Marvel bar, for example?
No.
How much of his career does this play a factor in his attractiveness level, of his status, of his clout, what have you? You know, because one of the things, let me just finish my thought here. Because one of the things that she says, I think, to Hana, I think it's later in the episode, doesn't she say, I like the options. I like that he is, you know, economically free to do whatever he wants to do. Like, if we say we'll go to Miami and it's just a whim, we can actually do it. And so the main takeaway here is for the gentleman or really anyone out there listening to us, like, it's real. Like, people say money can't buy happiness. I think it can to a certain level, but it's not really about money buying happiness. It's about having options in life will give you happiness, to have experiences, right? And so money is really just a proxy for having options, like she said. But like, it's very, I think it's just a takeaway here, like going forward, the guys that get ladies on Terrace House, we can see this play out here. And you can apply it to your own life, but they're not the desperate ones that are like really like, oh, gosh, I like you. Oh, kiss me. Oh, let's go to this church and bow and shake my hand and be my girlfriend. Those aren't the guys. And let me grab your head and kiss you. Like, those aren't the guys that get girls. It's the guys
this
that
sounds
are
very pointed now.
Show he's not the guy who gets girls.
Dang, of one person is on the attack.
But it's like the guys that actually get girls, and this guy's got all the girls in the house. He focuses on himself. He's not worried about it. He's not stressed about it. He's taking care of himself. He's handling his money. He's his own man. He doesn't need a woman. He's not desperate for a woman. It'll happen when it happens, you know. So that's my main takeaway. That's my main kind of controversial thought for the week. But I think there are lessons here for a lot of people to take from.
Yeah, I would say that Ryo, in a lot of cases, is a pretty objectively attractive person. Like, yes, he's like a decently good-looking dude, but he's also confident. He's successful. He has a stable source of income, right?
A lot of income, too, you would assume.
Right. And not to mention, I mean, being a pro basketball player, I mean, this guy has some coolness, some clout to it in and of itself. And so, yeah, I mean, getting with someone that has a stable income is certainly, it's comfort. You know, it's a guaranteed comfort and stability that, you know, so some people just can't give you. So I don't think, for instance, someone like Ruka or someone that was working at a Marvel bar or just like floating from part-time job to part-time job would be as appealing to at least someone in her of her mindset.
And honestly, I think the droopy eyes, like, okay, that's a distinguishing feature that is cute because he's attractive otherwise. But if he was like a bad person or a jerk, people wouldn't think so positively about, you know, his physical intricacies, I think.
Mm. And it reminds Vivi of her ex. Remember?
Or was that a conversation? Yeah. That's still so weird.
Was that a flirt though, or was that actually real? Who knows? And also, I wouldn't want to date someone if they're thinking about their ex. Like, that would shy me away from that personally.
Yeah, I think my thoughts on your controversial hot take, TM, is yes, for maybe someone like Vivi, who very clearly does value stability in their partner. Of course, that's like what Ryo offers, right? But I don't think that necessarily means that someone who, for example, works at a Marvel bar will never find love, right? It's different strokes, different folks, right? There's probably someone out there who is like, man, I just want to date someone who's laid back, chill, thinks he could be Spider-Man still in the future. You know, I just want someone who's playful and fun like that.
There's levels to this. Yeah, it's important to note. There's levels to it. Like, you know, of course you can find love, but it also is just, it's something here. Like, if Vivi is going to be, that's obviously an important feature for Vivi in a long-term partner. You know, I'm just saying, I think that his status, his job, his day-to-day, his lifestyle only adds to how attractive he is, aside from any physical features there. Mainly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I say let's move on, because that was a really big scene. That took up, like, the first third of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were on that scene, because we started with that scene, Chitro, back into that scene for, like, another 10 minutes.
I think the whole rice cooking thing, and by the way, there was a really good bobblehead kind of image of Ryo on the fridge, which I thought was pretty funny. But I think that he was kind of testing her too in a weird way. It's like he wanted to see what she would say when he needed rice and his foot was hurt, because he was opening up the cabinet like halfway just to see what she would do. And he goes, well, if you are okay with it, then okay. Like, I don't think he ever really intended to make it himself personally. That's my thought too.
From what I think I know of Ryo, I think he would have totally made it himself if he had to. He was definitely testing the waters to see, like,
he was testing to see how far he would go. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But if she said, no, I'm not gonna make it for you, I don't think he would have been like, okay, I guess I'm gonna go riceless tomorrow.
Go off and pout. Yeah, I'd be like, fuck this.
No. Yeah, he probably would have just made it himself.
Take your V necklace back.
He's a self-starter for sure.
Yeah.
So next scene here, let's go to another scene of a very smooth communication transaction here. We're on the first floor. It's Emi, Hana, Topaz, and Kai. And Emi and Hana are starting to talk about, oh, what are we going to do for lunch? I don't know. Let's maybe heat this up. And Topaz finally has a day off, and he announces it to the house and then says, Emi, would you like to go on a drive today and get lunch?
So I think this scene right here, starts off Topaz's long streak in this episode of just being on fire. Like, we learn a lot more about Topaz in this episode, a lot more. And so far, like, after this episode, Topaz becomes probably my favorite person in the house right now, just because all the stuff going on with him and all the stuff that we learn. He's very smooth, but we learned that he's got some wabi-sabi going on. He's an imperfect character, right? Mm. And his background is just so interesting. And now I just want to keep learning more and more about Topaz, but he starts off this episode by making this smooth-ass move to take Emika out, and she is so excited to go out on this date, and the date goes off smoothly, without a hitch.
It's kind of smooth, but she literally just put the egg in the frying pan, and he's
That's true.
Have you eaten yet? And she's like, no, yet, I'm about to. He's like, all right, well, let's go get something to eat. And then Emika's like happy to do it. You know, it's not an inconvenience or anything like that. And then I just like how she looks at Han, is like, hey, please eat this egg.
Please don't make my egg waste go to waste.
Yeah, it was, but Hana was happy for her.
Yeah, like 2 minutes off of being smooth, because he had been observing, and he even like walked over and like got a drink of water and like looked and then like came back and was like, have you eaten yet?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I would call Topaz smooth, honestly. I think he's kind of clunky, because he's like, he's like, hey, like, you know, thanks for letting me take her out to Hana. She's like, what do you mean letting you take her out? Like, you can do whatever you want. She's like, her own woman.
I need to be polite, even if it's not the appropriate situation to be polite in.
Like, I just always need to apologize.
Ruthlessly polite. Yeah. Ruthlessly apologetic.
What I will say, yes, it is clunky, but it's like he's the shy guy from school that found his confidence, even though, but he's like in that middle ground where he's still trying to like really build on that confidence, but he's at least confident enough to like make moves, and he's trying new stuff, and he may be internally, he's probably scared shitless, but he's doing it anyway.
Yeah, this whole episode, like, we're seeing him receiving his own dose of Terrace House therapy from within Terrace House. This is like a therapy session for him to work through a lot of shit. So it's turning into a real positive experience, hopefully, at least in this episode. You know, there's some ups and downs, but I think overall he's lucky to be in this position, as you and Yama say.
Yeah. And you know what else he's lucky about? He's lucky that he finally was able to work hard so he could eventually drive a sick ass Jag with a beautiful girl.
I think that was nice. I think that was nice for him to vocalize. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
It was funny though, because she's like, "Are you nervous driving the Jag?" And he's like, "Oh yeah." And then it cuts to a clip of him driving like a grandma down the streets of Tokyo and like 20, 30 cars behind them. Yeah, but it's just like, I'm waiting for them to honk. Like, if this was New York or anywhere, you know, they would have been like cussing at him, flipping him off.
Trust me, they probably honked in Tokyo too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I will say though too, you have to remember that they also have the camera van in front of them shooting the car from the front.
Gosh, that would be annoying.
So
if I was
however fast they're going,
it's the camera van's fault.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, I bet it was like, wait, slow down. We need to get a wider shot, and it's like, but there's traffic. And it's like, just do it.
A lot of traffic too. Traffic. Yeah.
But I guess they're also lucky in that they get to go to Korean barbecue. You guys remember Korean barbecue?
I remember Korean barbecue.
I miss that
shit.
Korean barbecue.
Bulgogi, pork belly,
samgyeopsal, some sundubu,
the dukbokki, the fucking fish, the fish cakes, some of my favorite. The marinated beef.
Let's just name all the Korean food we know. Guys, this is a Korean food podcast now.
I just want some kimchi and some makgeoni. Please.
Dude, I'm about to have some.
I liked that everything was UFO themed at the K-barbecue place that they went to.
That reminded me too. Okay, so pull back the fucking curtain for a minute, okay, in Wizard of Oz. Like, okay, so the house has to know exactly where he's going, right?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah.
So they can set up the cameras to go there. So they can set a camera on a tripod, ostensibly, outside of the exact restaurant they're going to, so they can have that shot and look at the facade of the restaurant and look at them walking towards it. But when they're walking towards it, okay, he's like, oh, where is it? Oh, where is it? He's like, oh, here it is. Yeah, you know, the one with the big Terrace House camera in front of it? That's the place. Like, why are you acting like you don't know where it is? It was just, it struck me as odd, I guess. Maybe I'm thinking about the show too much.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder how genuine just how genuine those scenes are. I don't know.
Set up before or like
totally.
They're like, okay, now you're walking toward us, or if someone's already there waiting, and they park and they get out of the car and they're like, oh, there's the camera guy. This is the restaurant.
Yeah, because they can't even walk to the restaurant they're going to until they had to park, you know, and then walk to the restaurant. They can't even do that until the cameras are set up.
Now, I will say benefit of the doubt, maybe. I mean, I agree that, yes, this part is definitely, like, kind of scripted, right? He knows where he's going. But he is still sort of new to Tokyo, right? And he came from another prefecture. So this might be more of a, like, oh, man, I'm still a little bit new to the city. Where are we? Where are we going? Oh, there it is. You know what I mean? Like, just kind of an internal monologue of, like, oh, I'm stumbling through the streets of Tokyo.
But the clue is it's the one with the camera and the lights.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's not like he's going to say, oh, right next to the Terrace House camera, that's where we need to go, Emmy. You know, like.
He can't say it out loud, right.
Yeah,
there's a giant flag outside.
Hey, Shinji, cameraman, there he is. Point us to the restaurant, please, producer.
Well, I think this was a great idea to have him drive Emika to the restaurant, though, because, I mean, he is a driver professionally, right? And so you'd have to think he's getting to know the roads in Tokyo pretty well just from driving them so much already.
Yeah.
And then two, I wondered to the camera point, I wonder how long, if at all, if it's possible for people just to be used to being around the cameras. They're just like, they can just get good at ignoring them.
Mm, sure.
That's
with
a good point.
Enough time.
That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really worried at first about this date, their eventual date, because I was getting flashbacks to Aloha State, because Topaz was like, let's go see that movie yesterday and get dinner. And she was like, oh, I have, you know, some plans, but maybe I can move them around. That's later in the episode. But initially when he was like, well, we both want us to go see this movie, I was like, that's going to be awkward as hell. They're not going to talk. But because they drove and then they like sat down at a restaurant, they had a lot of time to talk. And I think like it was a good conversation.
Yeah.
Like what they talked about. I think that we got to know Topaz a little more. And Emmy, I definitely feel like still has a wall up. Like she's not giving away a lot. But I could see them hitting it off as far as like they're both kind of like in this stage of like figuring themselves out and deciding what they want to do with their lives ultimately.
She also disclosed during this meal that she stayed because she saw potential in someone there in Tara's house, which is why she's still there.
Wink, wink,
wink, wink, nudge, nudge, nudge. Yeah, Rio. Rio. And so that was kind of telling. And we also learn later on, I think, in this episode that Topaz is kind of there for Emika. He was watching her. He was watching her. He's been attracted to her. And he's surprised that she is still there in the house.
I thought she was wink, wink, nudge, nudging about Topaz. Because a lot of the discussion about her recently has been like, oh, you know, this Topaz guy seems kind of cool.
I guess it's not impossible. But I was getting that about Rio. I don't know. I'm just bringing my previous thoughts to it, I guess.
Dale, you're giving us some weird eyes.
I am. This is a totally audio medium, so I should stop doing that. But I was making a face because there was a very, very brief moment when Vivi first showed up and they were talking about, oh, yeah, like we like Rio. But Emmy was like, I need to talk to you about that, Hannah. Like, I need to like revise something because I think Emmy's like under the duress of Hannah and now Vivi. I think she might wave the white flag when it comes to Rio.
Oh, we'll see. I mean, we already know as an audience that they have zero chance because he already said that he doesn't like them. And also after this docking scene we just witnessed, like, no, their competition is too strong. Vivi's too much of a beast. Like I said, she's a killer and she's out there killing. She's slaying.
Yeah. I don't know. If you ask me, I think Emika's all but given up at Rio at this point. Like, I just don't think she thinks the competition's worth it. And secondly, I get the feeling that there is, I don't know what you'd call it, not really animosity, but there's like a little bit of a discrepancy being that she's someone who doesn't really know what or where she wants to be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And whereas Rio is someone who's got all that figured out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so if I'm Emika, right, and the fact that he has all this stuff figured out at the same time, there's in the back of my head going to be a little bit of resentment. If I had to, you know what I mean? Because maybe that's the reason why she asked him to take her to sushi, you know, and like did all this stuff, because it was like one of those things where like, oh, you know, he can afford it, whatever.
Resentment.
I hate him. Make him pay for my sushi meal.
Yeah, I want the $120 version, bitch.
Yeah, I don't think it's something she's...
There's not a $600? Yeah.
Right. I don't think she's... It's something she's conscious of, but like, as opposed to like Topaz, where she feels like she can actually let her guard down and just relax around him, because it, like around Rio, she probably felt like she had to be on. You know what I mean?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like he's this big time athlete and he's expecting like this trophy wife material sort of person or something ridiculous like that. I think she had an idea of like who she should be around him in her head, whereas Topaz, she can just be herself.
And it must be nice to be pursued versus like doing all the pursuing. Like I feel like she's been like, Rio, let's go do this. Let's go do this. Whereas now the tables have turned and Topaz is like, Emika, what are you doing? What's up? Yeah. You want to go on a drive? You want to go to the movies? It's nice. It's a nice feeling, I'm sure.
Yeah, to bring it back to the date as well, too. I think overall, it was a very positive date. She went to the restroom. He was very smooth, paid for it. They were ready to leave when they walked out. She has that kind of debriefing meeting with Hannah about how it went. She thinks that he wants to get to know her better. You know, I think it's going a positive direction. She doesn't dislike him. He didn't do anything blatantly terrible during that. You know, he paid her a lot of... compliments. She said that she's you know, doesn't normally like to wear a lot of makeup or something like that, she's wearing makeup because she's not confident in herself. He's like, why aren't you confident in yourself? You should be really proud, really hot. Yeah. Like, you know, I think that overall he's showing he has more competence with this. He's a more assertive dater than I thought he was coming into the house, just laying down for everybody, saying, hey, you're older, you're older, you're older, you first, you first. You know, he's kind of seizing this, which is, again, to me, just indicative of, yeah, this is why he's here. He's been watching Emika this whole time, and this is why he is here.
He's been studying.
He has. He's been doing his homework.
What I find funny is, like you just said, Jack, he's always the, you know, oh, you're older, you first, right? Do you think he would be this sort of smooth if he were on this date with someone like Vivi, who's 3 years older than him? Do you think he'd still be able to say stuff like, oh, you don't need makeup, you know, like, oh, you should be confident in yourself. You should be very proud.
I think that they're such different personalities. Vivi and Rio are together because they're similar personalities. And that's why I like Topaz and Emika, because they had that quiet moment, right? But when he was asking her to go out on this date in the playroom, he said, you know, it's quiet sometimes. Oh, and Emika echoes that too to Hana, doesn't she? Because, yeah, we have quiet moments. There are lulls sometimes, but it's okay. They don't have a problem with quiet and silence. And, like, one of my favorite movies of all time, maybe my favorite movie of all time, Pulp Fiction, has a whole scene about that, about how they're comfortable. It's special to find somebody. You're comfortable just being quiet and not talking and just being a person. You know, that is rare. There's a lot of, it's much more common to, like, oh, well, I have to talk. I have to fill the space. I can't handle being quiet because it's too awkward. So it's cool that they have that dynamic together, I guess. So good for them.
Yeah, and to your point too, Jack, I think if Topaz went out with Vivi, I think her bigger personality would be almost intimidating to him. I don't think he would really have this quiet confidence that he has with Emika at all. I just don't think it would just, I don't think it would vibe.
Yeah, if this, the right it, way. Yeah, he would be too uncomfortable, I think, because she'd be too blah.
Yeah. The next scene I want us to go to here is the one in Akasaka, where they're at that that big old convention center for the ACC Tokyo Creativity Awards.
Remember conventions?
I don't remember conventions.
Four times.
But we need to talk about this. Lily Frankie gets on stage and he gets a award. And I didn't know this until someone mentioned it in our Discord.
Same. I know what you're going to say.
Now it's like, here it is, the man from Sakedogumis, right? Sakedogumis, if you want to say like a white person. He's the guy behind those long, long man commercials.
And
if
no,
you don't
know, no,
now, if you don't know what this is, please pause our podcast, go YouTube it, write the fuck
you're gonna
now.
Fall
watch them in order. There is an order.
There is. It's like the Marvel extended universe. There's the Long Long Man extended universe. This is a movie, basically. You need to watch all of these advertisements because that's what they are, commercials. You need to watch
and stay after the credits.
Yeah. Well, how many are there of those? I wonder. I'm pretty sure I've seen them all.
There's like seven.
Yeah.
My goodness. There's like a lot.
And so he was passing those out. Now I was wondering what that was, and now I like this guy way more now that I know he was part of that.
Same.
Genius.
He is a genius.
Yeah, I'm so happy to know. I kind of wish we knew that like last week.
Hey,
because
that's what Discord's for. So appreciate the person that dropped that in our Discord. Thank you. Join our Discord, guys.
Shout out to our Discord.
Yeah. Join our Discord.
What up?
Join our Discord.
After he gets that award for his fantastic commercial, I don't actually know if it's for that. They just kind of gave it to him without saying what it's for.
Yeah.
But then they go to a back room and it's just Topaz and him, and they're having a nice little like lunch or dinner or something.
this part's so stupid.
This part's so weird. Topaz struggles with a water dispenser. And then he's like, oh yeah, so I'm into Emika, right? This is where he says, like, oh, I've been, you know, like, I think I like her, maybe, I'm not quite sure. But then he shows Lily her Instagram, and Lily focuses real hard on a bikini video.
He's made his intentions clear from the get-go, to be fair 100%. To the guy. And I don't know if you guys know who Butch Vig is, but with that hat on, Butch Vig is, he was a famous producer. He did like all the grunge albums from the 90s. He did Nevermind. He's done a lot of seminal work. He's the current drummer for Garbage from the 90s again too. Anyways, Lily Frankie looks like the Asian version or vice versa of Butch Vig. They are like kind of separated at birth to me.
And I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, they're around the same age. But yeah, Butch Vig has done almost...
They're the same person.
They've done... he's produced like probably half the albums we've ever listened to in our entire lives. He's that prolific.
Like, other than the fact that obviously he's looking at her Instagram and focusing in on all the bikini pictures, I thought he like did a weird like armchair psychologist moment of this where it's like she needs to be seen. She needs attention. You can tell by her Instagram... And this and this, and like, you're gonna get like What did he say? Like, you're going to get, like, walked over by a girl like that. That's not right for you.
Yeah. He said that the Instagram, it showcases her vanity.
Ah.
Yes. She's very... Which, it's like, what else is Instagram,
that's what,
though?
Yeah. Instagram. Dude, that's what Instagram's
this
for.
This is such, like a teaching moment, though, because he, like, he even starts out, he's like, well, I know you clean my house, and I know you're cleaning Tara's house, right? It's almost like, yes, yeah, sir, I cleaned right before I came here, or something along those lines. Like, wow.
And he do. Wow. He do. Yeah. He totally do.
They are a very interesting pairing together, these two. They have a very interesting relationship. I've never seen anything like it.
Something else Lily says here that I'm very curious as to whether this is going to... We're going to see more of this in the future with Topaz. But he analyzes him and says, stumbling through life is your MO.
Oh.
Right? And I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but that definitely says a lot about who you are. And that kind of makes me think, like, how much of a, I mean, not fluke, but I guess how lucky was Topaz that he found out about this competition that Lily Frankie was hosting and then somehow was the hottest enough guy to win it and then finally ended up being Lily Frankie. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just curious, like, what chain of extremely lucky events maybe led to where he is now on Tara's house.
Yeah. I guess he won that show. I don't even know the full details about that. But one of the biggest lines here Lily says, too, is, you know, it's a dangerous slope to try and chase a past that was never meant to be.
Whew. I'm pretty sure that he's scripted.
Deep, man. I don't know. It just seemed like sage-ass advice.
It's part of
but
his
it's like,
acceptance speech for the award.
But it was just, I mean, it's, he... Stuff he says, a lot of stuff he says, aside from like girls and bikinis and stuff, most of the stuff Lily Frankie says makes a lot of sense to me, honestly. It just sounds like someone who's been there, done that. And yeah, I can see, because he doesn't know him, because he doesn't know what that date was like. All he sees is this Instagram. So yeah, he's just making a snap judgment. Because he's like, she seems like she's on a completely different planet than you, you know, but if you want to date her, it's not going to go well, but stumbling through life is your MO, so go for it. And it was kind of like a not a compliment.
Yeah.
No. And you know that Topaz takes every single thing Lily Frankie says to heart.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
his father figure. That's like the end all be all. He's not going to be like, no, you're wrong. Like if Lily Frankie doesn't approve of Emika, it's not going to happen, I don't think.
Right.
Like if Lily Frankie told him to jump off a cliff, he might.
Yeah, he that's might. I think it's a positive thing to a degree that Lily Frankie is sort of the father figure that we learn later on Topaz was missing. But at the same time, I feel this relationship could easily steer into an unhealthy one. And so I'm curious to see how this relationship evolves as we see more and more of it. Because I think this scene was probably one of the more, lighter ones out of the ones we've seen with Lily Frankie so far.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm going to keep an eye on this because I'm kind of worried about it.
You're talking about Lily Frankie and Topaz's relationship?
Yeah.
Well, I think based on everything Lily Frankie said is that he really does have Topaz's best interest in mind. Like he's giving him really good advice, I think. I don't think he's giving him really any bad advice. He just doesn't know Emika. And he might be right about Emika too. Topaz might not know Emika either. You know, Topaz is blinded by lust right now, you know. So I don't know. I think they have a good relationship right at this moment. Lily Frankie seems very smart to me.
Yeah, I think Lily Frankie for now, he seems really nice and genuine, at least that he wants Topaz to succeed in life, right? I mean, if you think about it, like Lily Frankie could have picked anyone to be his driver. You know, he could have like reached out to a professional butler driver corporation that probably exists and been like, give me your best driver. But no, he chose like this really hot 21-year-old boy, you know, that won a competition.
Now it sounds weird, but
that
yes.
Yeah. Sounds weird. But, you know, like he could have picked anyone, but he decided like, no, I'm going to take in this young guy and I'm going to like teach him about life a little bit. And I think that's nice.
Take him under my wing.
The Robin to my Batman.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I think let's take a little break from Topaz. Don't worry, it's a short one because the rest of the episode after this scene is still full of Topaz.
For real.
But we're in the girls' room and it's Vivi and Hada, and oh boy, a war is brewing, y'all. Vivi confronts Hada about the crying downstairs, right? And I don't know. This was weird to me because at first Vivi's like, oh, I don't know if Ryo's into me. I mean, for all we know, he could be into you.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. That's the fucking worst kept secret I've ever done.
Dumb ass.
Yeah.
Like no one believes you, Vivi. Quit trying to placate. It's just completely showing through.
Like, be real. Yeah.
Good intentions, I think, I hope, right, that that's coming from a well-intended place. Just horrible execution.
Bad.
But
yes.
But then she turns it around and is like, oh, and I took this video of Ryo and I watch it over and over and over again. And he gets cuter every time I watch it.
She
is totally not into him, though.
Infatuated. Like, that is infatuated. That's like unhealthy almost.
A little bit.
Like,
and to say that to least,
Hana. Yeah, that's
cold. Have the decency to just be like, don't mention it. Like, sure, that's going on in your own private life, but you know she likes him. Why would you just rub that in her face? Like, I don't know if she's thinking like, oh, we're bonding over the fact that we both like the same guy and we both have equal chance with him. Maybe that's in Vivi's mind because Hana's been around for longer. She has more of a rapport with Ryo that she might think, even though we've seen that I think Vivi has the better rapport with Ryo now, even over just a couple days versus the weeks and weeks that Hana's been there. But I don't know. Is this malicious? Is this just like a misunderstanding?
I don't know. I'm getting flashbacks to Noah telling Shohei that he kissed Sena while he was drunk.
I actually think it's pretty big of Hana to... I mean, I take her at her word, but she says she's not mad at Vivi. She's not mad at Ryo, really. This is something she has to deal with herself. That's pretty mature thought to have. It's very easy. I don't think anyone would blame Hana for being upset at Vivi if she was.
If I think that if Hana hadn't had that conversation with Kai, I think she would have. There would have been a little bit more animosity on Hana's end or Hana's end going into this conversation.
Yeah, because I agree. I think it's very big of Hana to at least say, like, I just want to be clear. I don't feel animosity toward you, right? Like, I think
exactly.
That takes a lot of guts to say when probably on the inside at that, maybe at that moment at least, she probably really fucking hated Vivi. You know, like, just in that few minutes of her life, it was just like, God damn it.
She's drooling. Yeah, she's dangling the video she has in her phone now in front of her face.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just taking that knife and driving it in deeper, man. That's all she's doing.
A little salt on the wound.
But Vivi is infatuated. If we didn't already know it before, which we all did, this is like, okay, 100%. Vivi's in. Now she doesn't care about getting all three guys. What other two guys? You know?
Ryo's the only guy for me.
She's got her blinders on now. Squared in.
Mm-hmm. See, those other two folks are guys. Ryo is a man.
Guess so.
Yeah.
A basketball
man. There's the distinction.
Yep. All right, do you guys enjoy that break from Topaz? Because we're about to dive back in.
The whole rest of this episode is Topaz.
We're going to get the whole Topaz and nothing but the Topaz.
And I don't mean this in a bad way. I actually really like him in this episode. It's just that, man, this is all him at this point. So we're in the boys' room. It's Kai and Topaz, right? Topaz was just at work and he loved every minute of it, which is so on brand for him.
Yes. Work his life.
Yes. And Kai asked how the date went. And I think, you know, Topaz has a pretty apt understanding here of, maybe it's a lack of understanding, but at least he knows himself enough to know where this wandering is coming from. He's unsure if it's romance or if he's just happy to befriend someone because he's a lonely guy. Like earlier today, right, he was just at a train station drinking beer alone and he felt so lonely. Like, there's a difference between being alone and feeling lonely.
Oh.
And he definitely felt lonely. Right. And he starts tearing up here because he's like, it's just been nice to be in Tara's house and be able to make small talk with everyone every day.
Oh, it's sad because he doesn't have a peer group. Probably everyone he hangs out with is Lily Franke and like all his older friends, you know, and he's there working. So he's not really hanging out either. You know, he's not himself.
He's on the clock.
You know, yeah, exactly. And so, it's a good break for him. I mean, I've certainly felt, you know, I can share those same feelings of isolation that sometimes here, you know, I'm glad that we can still connect here remotely and stuff, but I haven't like physically, you know, talked to someone in person in a long time, like a lot of other people have too. But man, he gets emotional here, doesn't he? You know, he's saying that, wasn't he saying, or is it later, but he's saying like he's never felt loved.
Yeah, and that's like, when he's drunk,
he's letting it pour out. Well, I think
this boy
I think he just talks about it a little bit here to Kai as well, too. You know, he's just never felt it around the people behind him, and he starts getting teared up, and that might be what drove him to drink, maybe. To start drinking.
This is where he says, literally, I'm starving for affection. Dude, like, yeah, he just says a title drop.
That is sad. And then he was talking about how much he loves Lily because, you know, he's like a father to him. Sometimes he cooks for him. That really, like, affected him when he said that. And, you know, his dad abandoned the family. Didn't he say he has one sibling and one mom?
Yep.
My dad abandoned him. And he definitely has abandonment issues about it. And he definitely has, like, affection issues and love issues. That he's working through, and we are seeing that, and you know, like, kudos for him for sharing this with us, because I think that's kind of brave to be this vulnerable on TV. You know, he's putting himself out there, right? Like, more than anybody, really.
Yeah, for sure. This is the kind of, like, I don't know, like, emotional, like, moments that you expect to see on like reality TV, where they're talking like directly to the camera and being like, I never felt love because like my father abandoned me, whatever. But I'm really glad to see this played out in a much more natural way, where it's like, yeah, we have like the, I guess, like lubricant of him being like a little tipsy and very sad, but I'm glad that he's feels free enough to talk about it in the house, and that the people in the house are receptive and want to talk to him about it, and that Vivi said what she did. I am so glad that we had the whole conversation about, you can't, like, the phrase, like, you can't love someone until you love yourself. It's like, that's bullshit. Like, maybe that's a very Western idea, and that's why, like, Vivi and I were, like, vibing on that, but I was like, nah, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. You've experienced love. You got love. But it can feel like you don't sometimes, for sure.
Yeah, I think Vivi is really on point here in that, what was it she said? Something along the lines of, you can't wait to rely on someone to love you first.
Because then you are depending on the actions of others to control your life, which is mainly, you know, her problem with that theory.
Yeah, as opposed to just find the love within you, or maybe it doesn't even have to be love, but just find something within you where you can be content with who you are, right?
Like, officially, where I fall on this side of the debate of, like, do you have to love yourself first to love someone else, or do you have to be taught what love is in order to love somebody else? I'm more the latter than the former. So I'm more in line with Topaz here and less in line with Vivi. Like, I don't think, like, love just divines itself inside you and just bubbles up spontaneously, and now you know it, and now you know how to show it. Like, clearly he's had issues here. And I think, like, the main takeaway here is Vivi kind of proved that point, that he does know how to love. It's just his love language is different than, he's not realizing that he's showing love by doing acts of service, by doing the dishes, by cleaning the house. That's how he loves people, you know? And so someone showed him that before in the past, and that's what people did. They maybe weren't like hugging and kissing and loving him physically and affectionately like that. But he did learn that behavior somewhere to show someone you care about them by doing those acts of service. So it's just a matter of love language. So I think that kind of, to me, like, confirms, like, okay, yeah, you have to be shown what love is before you can love someone else. And this isn't just coming from me. This is also coming from other experts out there. I'm not going to, like, throw any names out there. But, like, this is a widely debated topic. And I think that usually the research has shown that, yeah, you do have to be shown love before you can really know how to show someone that you love them. It's not just something that just poof, it's there and now love is here, as romantic an idea as that sounds.
Yeah, first of all, Vivi won a lot of points though with me for this scene in particular. I just love how level-headed she is and how she handled Topaz in the situation very well. And it definitely came from a place of, like, caring, right? And I think that I love that Topaz really, we pull back the curtain on Topaz like crazy between these two scenes. Like, I mean, we learned a lot about his character, and it actually really made me happy to hear that he genuinely loved working for Lily Frankie. Was that the only one? Like,
I thought,
cause I wasn't sure how we felt about working for Lily Frankie. And I am glad to know that
he's filling that void for Topaz. And it must be insanely difficult dealing. I mean, he was in Tokyo for 8-10 months or whatever, and just completely socially isolated to a degree.
And real quick, Colin, Kai even said, like, you're really lucky to have a job that you love. Mm. You know, yeah. He's really getting high levels of satisfaction from his day job. And I agree. Like, that's all we could ever hope for, is feeling like we're making a difference.
Yeah. And I think Kai was pretty supportive too. I mean, that was a lot to have dumped on you too, right? Like, that's some personal bombs a little bit there too. And I think Kai handled it well and was very supportive too.
To bring it back to the kitchen scene, what I think is really smart of Vivi to have done here, right, is that, like, let's take a step back from the situation a little bit and just kind of look at it, you know, as a little more objectively as we can. What we have here is a drunk man who's a little bit belligerent and really sad about where his life is, and two sober women trying to basically talk him off a ledge.
And he's red,
right?
He's red as fuck.
He's very red. Tomato red.
Tomato red.
Yeah.
So funny.
Topato red.
Oh, no. Anyway. Don't do it. Don't do it.
This could have broken very badly, right? Because when you're that drunk, you could totally have this worldview of like, no, I don't care what anyone says. My life sucks and it's never getting better, right? Like, he could have just been an asshole about all of this. But for one, I give him props for actually listening, right? Like, that's insane to do with how drunk he seemed, right? Like, that's fantastic that he did and seemed to internalize that message. But also, I think Vivi's really smart here in how she not only said, hey, you, like, I disagree with your worldview, but also you've already show love, right? I think that's a very powerful example to say, like, these things you already do, just look at them in a different light, because you're already showing that you love at least being in this house, right? And that is something that you can't, like, there's no way for Topaz to dispute it. Like, it's not like he's going to suddenly stop doing the dishes because he's like, no, I don't feel love, so fuck it, right? Like,
no.
Right.
Yeah, he's going to keep doing it.
He'll get in trouble with Lily if he does that.
Right. And that's that, I think, maybe helped him realize, like, oh, maybe I do kind of at least have an idea of what love is.
Yeah.
And also, just because I don't necessarily agree with Lily's theory on that doesn't mean that I, like, don't think she's awesome in this scene. Lily, didn't I? Yeah, I meant Vivi.
Yeah.
Her, exactly what she says, like, you know, hoping love will come and then getting dejected when it doesn't is super lame. And she's, like, not really mincing her words here. Like, she's, like, telling him, like, hey, this is how it is. This is life. We got to deal with it. This is your situation. You're the only person that can pull you out of this victim kind of mentality, you know, and no one's going to do it for you. So you have to really assert yourself. And yeah, it is tough love. And she's not just telling him what he wants to hear in order to just, you know, move on to the conversation with their lives. She's, like, really trying to help him, giving him good advice. And I was really impressed by that, especially, you know, as Rio said, as someone at her age, she's very mature. She's very grounded. She's given a lot of thought to things. You know, I think that she's just demonstrating here. She's got her shit together and she's generally a good person that cares about the roommates in the house. And it's awesome.
Yeah. As impromptu as this, like, kind of intervention was, like, I think everyone involved did very well. Vivi had her arguments very well organized. Topaz was, like, receptive toward it all, even though he was kind of drunk. And there were even a few times where he was like, well, that's the ideal. And she's like, no, that's reality.
Yeah.
And then he was like, I see what you're saying there.
And Hannah was there.
Hannah was also there.
She was there to nod along. She was nodding along.
Observing. She said a couple things at some point. Sure. But obviously we remember more of what Vivi was expounding on very eloquently, especially for her third language. Jeez, Vivi.
Good God.
Right.
Jealous.
But I think, like, walking away from this, everyone, good stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wondered, though, if Hannah was so quiet because she was actually getting a lot out of this conversation, too. Maybe she was nodding along to, like, in her head, she was like, damn, that's, like, salient advice. Me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would just like to say, though, like, these two scenes, I love them so much, and they define the reason why I love this fucking show.
Mm.
Like, this is why I watch Terrace House. These, like, moments like these, it's a huge reason.
Human, real, raw.
Exactly.
Yep. Terrace House.
I just hope that Topaz doesn't look back on the scene and is embarrassed. It's hard not to be when you're, like, recorded forever for posterity. You're drunk, you're red-faced, you're crying, you're emotional. You know, I hope he takes away good stuff here, and I hope, you know, Lily doesn't lay into him too much for it, I guess, is the main concern.
Because honestly, I hope he looks at this and is embarrassed in a way that I like to think he'd be like, that was 3 months ago.
That's me. The old me.
I'm a different, right. Better mm-hmm. Topaz now. Yeah. You know, that guy was lame. Fair and enough. I'm way better. Fair and enough. I can handle my alcohol better, maybe. I don't know.
Fair Hopefully. Enough.
Yeah. I think let's move on to the last scene of this episode. It's pretty low key, right? Presumably it's another day. Topaz is cleaning dishes. He's vacuuming the living room. He's doing very Topaz-like things. And then Emmy comes downstairs and asks if she can help. And, you know, they kind of work together in cleaning up the house, which is nice. And Topaz just kind of comes out and says it. Hey, I'm interested in you. I think I like you a bit. And I would like to go see the movie yesterday and have dinner with you on Thursday.
My man. Look at my man over here. Killing it.
She even moved plans for him.
That's pretty powerful. Something.
Yeah. Instead of just being like, oh, can't do it. And she's like, oh, I'll move it. It's fine.
Yeah, he's like, no, you shouldn't do that. No, she's like, no, it's fine. I'll do it.
I'll you yogurt. Plans. It's good for hangovers.
Is that true?
I've never heard that before, but I mean, it doesn't seem to be too far-fetched. There's probiotics there. I don't know.
You guys don't know about the hangover, the yogurt hangover? You smear it on your forehead.
Stop
and you
it,
lay
Robert.
Down at a 90-degree angle parallel to the ground.
I would love to hear the after story of somebody taking all your bullshit advice that you've ever said on this show, and then what's their life like now? How's that yogurt doing on your forehead?
You rub it right
My
into
skin
the temples.
My skin is flawless.
Yes. My hangover's still here, but damn it, I'm glowing.
But damn it, my Hell skin yeah. looks good. Mm.
Yeah. Man, you're starting to sound like Gwyneth Paltrow over here, man.
Yikes.
Goop.
I don't know. What I really liked about this... this date asking out stuff. We've seen a lot of people initiate dates, right, on Terry's house. Just in the history of it, we've seen a lot of people ask, like, hey, are you free this day, right? What I love is in this one, I don't think we've seen this at all. And, well, maybe a few times, but this is one where Emmy's like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. Like, I don't know what to say. You know, it's like she's genuinely caught off guard. It's kind of like she's let her guard down. And with her guard down, she's like, I don't know what else to say here. It's very embarrassing, right? And that is so wholesome to me. Because I feel like if she had asked Topaz the same thing, he might have been a little bit like, oh, that's a little embarrassing. Oh my gosh, what do I say? I'm nervous.
I mean, he basically confessed to her in a way. He's like, I feel like the only reason I want to, after he already asked her to hang out with her, it's like the only reason I want to hang out with someone is to get to know them better romantically in a way. It was almost like a quasi-confession. You know, and she's like, she's embarrassed, like, oh, I feel bashful. I don't know what to do. Oh, gosh. And then he takes that picture of her. Also to note, I just noticed this. Emeka has her bra strap out and her shoulder thing down on her sweater. This is a move in the house, people.
Wink.
Confirmed conspiracy theory.
It is shoulder season, my dudes.
Shoulder season.
Hell yeah.
Shoulder season.
Cue the X-Files theme.
I love that she replied, though, with I would love to hang out with you more, too. Like, she's definitely on board, and it's good to see that Topaz is the exact opposite of the passive boys that we got at the beginning of this
he's
entire
there.
Series.
He's on a mission. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was there for Emeka. That's why he is here.
And honestly, I'm liking this Emeka a lot more. It's a very far cry from the one that was like, hey, you owe me sushi because I wore your shirt once.
Yeah. And,
Go ahead, Jack.
And it shows that these ladies, Hana and Emeka, are handling the post Rio saga completely differently. They're going in completely different directions.
Yeah.
Hana's going to be like, no, I need to force my feelings on Rio and get a straight answer. I'm going to cry if I don't get it. Emika's like, this other guy likes me. Let's, you know, I mean, they only have so much control over whatever, but it's just interesting, right, to see two girls with the same issue handling it completely differently.
Yeah. And I don't want this to be the end for them. I don't want the Rio thing to be the end all be all. I really want to see, you know, what happens with Emmy and Topaz. And I want to see, like, Hana get some kind of closure before she decides her time at Terrace House is over. I'd be really interested seeing that, like, if she decides to stay on after the whatever happens with Rio. But we'll have to wait and see.
You know what I want to see? I want to see Kai perform. That's my next.
Kai's here too.
Well, we talked about. Well, yeah, he's barely in this episode, but yeah, we did talk about how last week or two weeks ago, how he's new at stand-up. So, like I said a couple weeks back, like. That is concerning to me that someone's just starting out. I would be feel a lot more comfortable if he's like, oh, yeah, I've been doing this forever. I do stand up in English. I'm a cold grizzled pro. This ain't no thing. But he's like, no, I just found laughter out of a heartbreak and I decided to try this on a whim. I'm like, OK, well, hopefully, dude, you're good. I will be brutally honest either way. Like I love stand up comedy and this dude better make me laugh or it's going to be bad.
Or you'll break his kneecaps.
Not necessarily that. But.
Ah.
Yeah. Murder. I think that the Emica that we got around Rio when she was head over heels for him for a little while, I think that was a different person almost. Because that also, keep in mind, that came around the fact that around the time that she was very confused about what she wanted to do with her life, right? I mean, she still kind of is, but... Around that time, we got a confession, and that was like at the peak of like I'm really lost on as to the direction my life is going. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think she was just kind of like grabbing at things. Like maybe she was trying to make going out with this pro basketball player part of her identity or something. Mm-hmm. She was looking for something to kind of grab onto, and so that led to her kind of taking on a different persona than what we're seeing with Topaz here, which is I think. I'm getting the sense it's closer to who she really is.
More genuine.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I kind of feel that same way. I think maybe she was just kind of like grasping at something to do, right?
And yeah.
When you do that, you kind of flounder a bit. I think that this is a good place for us to wrap our discussion on episode 28. We will be back next week. We're going to talk about episode 29 about love. We're going to talk about love, guys.
Hey.
Shocker.
About love. Yep.
Never done that before.
I'm excited. It's about love. It's about love. If you have any questions or comments, any theories that you think we missed, you can email those at questions@terracehousepodcast.com. And like we mentioned earlier in the show, you know, we've got our Discord. If you want to join that, the link's in the description below. It's a lot of fun if you just want to kind of hang out and talk to us or other fans of our show. And something I kind of wanted to say here, thank you all so much just for kind of like listening to our show just in general. I mean, we're always grateful for what you guys do for us and, you know, like listen for from us. But, you know, we've noticed a lot of big ups on YouTube recently and it's been pretty freaking cool. So thank you guys for that.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, everybody.
You guys rock.
Hell yeah. We will be back next Tuesday with another episode where we're going to talk about episode 29 about love. This has been Tadaima. Thanks for listening. Itadakimasu.
Follow us on Instagram at TadaimaGram, on Twitter at TadaimaPod, and check out our YouTube channel, Facebook group, and brand new Discord server, all linked in the show notes.